everyone. Welcome back to Morgan Hasn't Seen. It is very exciting today as we continue with our cyborg sci-fi series with another of my bucket list movies from the 250th special episode of Morgan Hasn't Seen. We are really cranking these bucket list movies out so far. And I absolutely love it, doubly so, because we're back with another as voted for video episode for this particular show today. So if you are not watching this episode over on the It's a Wonderful Podcast YouTube channel, you might not be getting the full experience that those people who are watching, you can't see us, you know. You might not be getting the full experience that those people who are over on the It's a Wonderful Podcast YouTube channel are getting. Of course, subscribe, ding the notification bell and all that great stuff. If you are just listening, of course, we love you much the same. We certainly do. And subscribe wherever you are listening, obviously. But we're here. Another bucket list movie. A big 80s nasty sci-fi movie, hyper violent, crazy, dystopian police robots, because it's RoboCop from 1987 today. Janine, Paul Verhoeven, the madman that he is, I don't think anybody quite captures that insane line of movies quite like Paul Verhoeven.
His filmography is very strange. Interesting.
It is. He's able to kind of hit the line of genuinely great movie that is totally insane and campy and over the top to a ridiculous degree, yet stays somehow grounded.
Yes.
Like this movie. And even his, well, what many people would call, I think, his most notorious movie, Showgirls, I think even still does that, even stays to a certain level, grounded in some sort of emotional story.
Yeah, I could agree with that. Even
as insane like, as that obviously is.
Even something like a movie that plenty of people have told me I need to show you, Starship Troopers. There definitely is an emotional, character-driven through line amongst all of the crazy alien action and over-the-top campy things throughout that film. So,
yeah,
definitely part of his signature style, I'd say.
We're definitely dealing with that here as well. I mean, it's as much, it has the feel as much of an 80s action movie, an Arnold movie of something of that scale, something of that thrilling kind of power to it that those kind of movies have. Certainly the violence is a little bit more extreme in this, a little bit gorier, a little bit nastier.
But fun to see practical effects again as well, so.
Oh, very much so. There's one particularly horrific kind of body horror moment in this movie. Not least of which because this is RoboCop. It's where a murdered police officer is put into a cyborg body, and that's body horror in itself. But I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about what happens to that one henchman dude later on.
When
he becomes this sort of squid man.
Yeah.
What's this? What goes on there?
Yeah.
You might as well sprout
the toxic
tentacles.
Waste just splashing over him and instantly melting him into this blob of disgustingness. Yeah. Yes. Like, looked so good makeup wise.
It does, but he looks like Swamp Thing without the green.
Yes, yes. Or, you know, Toxic Avenger, but much better executed. Yeah.
That's an old movie. You know what? Let's just put this out there right now. Something like The Toxic Avenger, I don't think will ever interest me enough to watch that movie. I think it's just a bit too much.
You're not like a trauma style movie fan.
No, I feel like it's just a bit too excessive.
You know, have you seen Death by Temptation? Wasn't that a trauma movie?
No, I haven't. I don't. Okay. I don't really know anything of that. Whenever I see that brand of
it's like it's a black vampire movie. Come on. So you you might be slightly into Death by Temptation, but yeah, Troma is a very weird brand of films. So yeah. You know, I get that. But yeah, definitely was giving that vibe, and this movie just being really random and weird and campy, and but still, like you said, having that emotional through line story that you could really latch on to. You know, you have your kind of evil corporation and very, you know, this I like this kind of world they create that is like dancing the line of dystopia, but it's still a functioning world, because I think everyone always has this very specific vision of what dystopia is. You think it's kind of a desolate world where, you know, yeah, everything's broken and you know, nothing works and no power, and you're just kind of like wandering. And that's kind of the essence you get immediately when you think of dystopia. But there are so many different versions of what dystopia is. And this film really dances, you know, that kind of common thought I think we have about a world like that, and really creates an interesting Detroit version of Detroit. So,
yeah, it almost makes you think, because obviously you have in fiction, in fantasy fiction, of any sort, you have like high fantasy, middle fantasy, low fantasy.
Yeah.
And high fantasy being something like Lord of the Rings, low fantasy being where it's virtually just set in the real world, but there might just be a spark of magic that happens or something like that. And just substitute the word fantasy for dystopia, and in RoboCop, you are dealing with low dystopia. An America, a world that's still there, still works to a degree. There's still people living there. But Detroit here is getting, you know, the short end of the stick, as it frequently seems to do.
Yes. In
all the time. I do feel
in all media. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. They do tend to attack it for being the cesspool of crime and terror and horrible things and, you know, abandoned homes and, you know, a beat up infrastructure and all of that kind of thing.
I'm sure there's places like this everywhere in the US.
Yes. Me and my girlfriends were talking about how basically everywhere has a downtown that is shit. Like everywhere's downtown is most likely where all your homeless are and where there's crime, and you know, you're gonna see abandoned buildings and beat up cars and things don't look great, and it's not this polished thing. Every city has that, no matter where you go. So yeah, just to kind of pigeonhole Detroit as that place always to kind of depict that aspect and set it in this you know, pre-dystopian future type thing, it is very kind of stereotypical. But we do get kind of those very tropey things, which adds to the campiness of this film and kind of the fun of the film too. So
yeah, but I mean, we're dealing with the corporation OCP, is it?
Yes.
In the movie, who are the ones who end up creating RoboCop. They essentially run the city.
Yeah, the police.
Creating this new city called Delta City, and basically trying to do away with what they refer to as Old Detroit, because Old Detroit is broken, it's failed, it's just a pile of rotting ashes, you know, and that kind of stuff. We don't want to deal with that anymore. Look at this nice new clean city we have. Yeah. It's almost a little bit like Metropolis that we talked about on the main show last week. Let's create a fancy city, but will it be that great? Probably not. No. If we ever get to Delta City.
Yeah.
Because of the evil machinations going on.
Yes, a lot of corruption behind getting there. So this is always kind of how the tale goes.
Yeah, they want the best in law enforcement. They want to create law enforcement that is 24 hours, doesn't have to eat, basically isn't a person.
Yeah, but like we open this movie with, you know, we get a series of kind of fun vignettes that kind of tell the story, which were giving me like really fun Willy Wonka vibes, those little fun vignettes that kind of pepper, you know, more into your world, into creating, you know, where we are outside of your characters. So I liked these kind of news reports and commercials and ads and clips of this crazy TV show. You know, I think everybody knows that crazy guy, I'd buy that for $1 kind of thing. So, yeah. You know, we open with this news report kind of telling us what's going on. And we're getting these news stories about another cop killed on the street. And, you know, the cops are on the verge of striking because so many of them are getting killed and attacked. And so that is why there's this big kind of push to get these, you know, robotic police officers out there so that, you know, they can not be defeated so easily and not have kind of the human error aspects that go into, you know, policing the city and really kind of get things done without having to, like you said, eat and sleep and, you know, worry about safety and all of that kind of thing. So. Yeah, yeah. I like that. That's where we kind of open it. We set up our story as cops are getting killed left and right, like, you know, crime's running rampant. And so there's a need for this.
It's an interesting structural choice to put in your movie, to frame your movie, beginning it with news reports and this bizarre commercial. It does add a certain level of depth that you need to help put yourself within this world. Mm-hmm. I think only adds to the experience of being in this world while you're watching the movie, fully encompassing yourself. And it does do exactly what you're right in saying, what Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory does in that weird little bit towards the end of the first sort of act of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, where you get these random things going on with bizarre people, like the woman who goes missing, and you know, there's a
her husband's been taken hostage.
That's right,
the people who have taken him want her box of Wonka bars, and she, like, before that she's just hysterical, like, oh, I'll give anything to get my husband back. They want your case of Wonka bars, like, give me like 24 hours to think about it. Like, she actually has to like pause. So just, you know, just these little vignettes to show what is going on in the world, how this is affecting everybody as a whole or the city as a whole, and building your world in this creative kind of way, I think was a really fun choice. Also, though, it was, I watched the Netflix, the movies that made us, and they did this, you know, one of them was on RoboCop. So I got to watch a little bit of that. And apparently they did these vignettes to kind of just use up the filming time because the RoboCop suit was not finished yet. So they needed to film something. So they ended up filming these vignettes to kind of fill up time until the suit was done. But then they ended up actually using a good chunk of their budget on these vignettes. So when it came time to actually film things for the movie itself, they were running low on money.
that is quite interesting. I think that's an example of something becoming a happy accident, I think, because they do add a significant amount to the movie, because they're not just in the very opening of the movie. They keep coming back, these little news reports, these little commercials you get about various random products. There's this particularly egregious car that is mentioned a handful of times
board
in the movie
game,
that we get a commercial of a weird military board game about blowing each other up that we get at one point. It's very disturbing when you actually read into it, when you actually look at the kind of stuff that you're dealing with, but it fits in with the tone of this movie. It's heightened level of violence anyway, but it's just insane kind of political I suppose, agenda that it does
have.
Yeah,
like, it's propaganda, and I like that it's this through line that we see throughout, that this is what this, you know, kind of official government type entity, you know, is pushing at people to distract them, yeah. to, you know, make them look at these flashy things, give them a hint of the new world they could have, and normalize them with kind of violent type situations. And so
because you're
going
to be dealing with your new police force that is going to be very violent, because when RoboCop does eventually come into this movie, and we'll get obviously into that, RoboCop himself, as much as we might like him and we might see the heart that may still remain within RoboCop from being Officer Murphy early on in the movie, we may still always see that heart. But RoboCop's very violent. He doesn't hold back. You know, he fully pummels people and just splatters people around buildings when he needs to.
Yeah.
That's his role. He is dead or alive.
You're coming with me. Yes. But I do like that is something that Murphy said when he was Murphy. I think Peter Weller does a really good job of selling the changes in this character while still trying to have this kind of foggy connection to who he was as a human. And even in the aspects of the film, when that kind of intertwines and his mind starts connecting to what happened to Murphy. And so he just has this directive that pushes him to seek out the men who attacked him. I think that's really interesting as well. So I like that, you know, this character, we see this whole kind of montage of him doing what he needs to do as this RoboCop, you know, getting things done, no holds barred. But then the personal aspect comes in, and that's when it gets really interesting.
Yeah, because we see him at the beginning. He's been transferred to the Hell on Earth precinct of Detroit policing, as everybody refers to it, because nobody's happy in this police precinct.
Yeah, they're ready. Well,
I always like police movies when they are more grimy and more dirty and more nasty.
I thought you were going to say I like movies when they have a surly police captain or surly black police captain.
Well, I mean, that is a trope in itself, I think, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
He plays this trope wonderfully in RoboCop, by the way.
And I feel like he really cares, too, which is nice to see.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, but, you know...
No, I'm talking about police movies because, this is a dystopian sci-fi movie, whatever you want to call it. It's also a police movie. It's just as much Dirty Harry as it is Terminator. You know, it's that kind of relentless one-man attitude that, you know, you're not going to take any prisoners. You are going to do exactly what is necessary, as horrible as that may be, because that's just the movie we're living in. That's just the world of this movie. And I think I prefer police movies when they are grimy like this, and everybody's just a little bit, all the police officers are a little bit miserable because they're living in this insanely violent, dirty
situations.
World.
Yes, and we're getting constant cuts to these news reports of cops, another cop getting killed, another cop getting murdered, all of this stuff. So, and I like that you think with this evil corporation involved and talking about how they kind of own the police. The police aren't very corrupt. Like, you would expect a lot of corruption on the police force, but for most of the film, they are pretty much just frustrated. Like you said, they're ready to strike. They're tired of being killed and they feel like they're outnumbered by all the crime things happening in the streets and they can't keep up. But I love the captain's like, no, if you get rid of us, if you go on strike, who's going to keep the streets clean? Who's going to, you know, do what needs to get done out there? So I like that, you know, this is a police station that is not super corrupt. It's just out of pure frustration. That they ultimately end up kind of taking orders from OCP when they're asked to kill RoboCop. I think that's kind of the most kind of government interference and control that comes out of OCP and their involvement with policing. Other than that,
but even when that happens, the precincts that we're dealing with are the ones who are vehemently against doing that, because they're the ones that house RoboCop at their precinct, and it's kind of these, you know, extra police or law enforcement officials, whoever they may be, that aren't exactly in this precinct group.
Yeah.
And are the ones who are far more into just destroying RoboCop on the orders of OCP, because obviously, you know, there's been a bit too much found out and what have you.
Yeah.
But it is, in that sense, a movie that kind of sticks up for the little guy, sticks up for the working people who are just doing their job. You know, this is what this is their life. It's very dangerous. We should, you know, have respect for this kind of thing, because they're just doing their job. They don't want to have to deal with all this ridiculous crime that is being thrown onto this city, ultimately because of your angelic OCP corporation, because they're actually in the crime world secretly, not in, you know, they're playing kind of both sides in order to fully destroy old Detroit so they can progress with the Delta City idea. It's all very sinister, but that's what we're dealing with. So I like how all of that police precinct are quite honorable, and obviously Murphy at the beginning and Nancy Allen is very honorable.
Oh, yes.
And Murphy at the beginning is kind of honorable to a fault, because he thinks he can go in.
You know, he's really idealistic when he comes into it. Yeah.
He thinks he can go into this situation, you know, almost on his first job with his new partner, Nancy Allen. He is tasked to kind of take down Kurtwood Smith's band of bad guys.
And yes.
Did I never think I would see Kurtwood Smith be so intimidating and
right?
Actually believably intimidating? It's very impressive.
I think they say that's kind of partly why they cast him, because he looked kind of like a nice guy and they kept him with the glasses, so you'd kind of think he was smart. But for him to just be so grimy and evil, was a nice surprise to have cast somebody who looks like that, and then him to just play this deplorable villain, I think was a really fun casting choice. And the fact that they are kind of, they're the most, you know, you expect in a movie like this for the police to kind of be in the pocket of OCP and more corrupt based on kind of what they tell you in the story. But when it turns out that OCP has this like gun for hire with this criminal squad, when their quote unquote mission is to, you know, get rid of all the crime, but they have this criminal gang on their payroll, I think is a really interesting, you know, shift with that whole concept, because you expect the police to be the ones that are corrupt in a story like this, but it's not. So
it is, it's a great moral twist that the movie has, and helps, you know, humanize us towards RoboCop himself even more, because he is still the one doing the right thing, but struggles now between fighting against his creator, and there may or may not be a little bit of programming where he's not quite allowed to fight properly against his creator.
That was a really interesting aspect too.
But if his creator's the one doing the crime, I love it when that comes up and he goes and confronts that vice president of OCP. And we first then realize that, oh, this goes quite deep.
Yes, it like breaks down his like CPU and all of that if he tries to attack somebody who works for OCP.
Yeah, so this is safeguard that was corruption.
Put in place. Yes. So, you know, he gets, you know, there's a certain point where he catches Kurtwood Smith, and Kurtwood Smith confesses that OCP hired him and all of this, and that he's behind, OCP's behind kind of all the corruption. And he says this, and obviously, you know, RoboCop can record everything.
Yeah.
And so he goes to the vice president to confront him, and he can't arrest him, he can't do anything, and RoboCop just starts like breaking down, because to try to attack somebody who works for the company will like shut him down essentially. So
yeah. I like the birth of RoboCop as well. I like how much POV we get from RoboCop, and it likes I like the fact that it takes us a while for us to get a full shot of him, because a lot of it is
it's him on his back and the surgery and that perspective of everything that's happening to Murphy up until they decide to turn him into RoboCop. Just even that obviously death scene with Murphy is so brutal. So just like to get into all of that. On that behind the scenes thing I watched, it was like a really big task to try to find somebody. On that little documentary, they talked about Peter Fonda just walking in like, "Hey, I'm here to be your RoboCop." And they were like,
"Peter Fonda."
Yes. And they were like, "Yeah, no." And then Arnold wanted to do it because the film was made by Orion, and Orion, I think, did Terminator. So, you know, he was really excited.
They did Predator as well.
Yes. So they tried to put him in like the suits they were fabricating, and he just was already too bulky, because the suit is kind of supposed to bulk you up, you know, so he just looked really bulky, like the Michelin Man. So they're like, no, that's not going to work. So then they ended up trying to just go by three criteria. Like, the person who plays RoboCop has to be thin so they can fit nice and slender in the suit, and the suit will kind of bulk them up. They also have to be physically fit so that they can be comfortable moving the suit, strong enough to hold it up. And they also have to have really nice lips, because that's the part that's going to show through. I would say
they mouth acting needed.
Yes. And I would say they also should need somebody with a good voice, which that wasn't one of the criteria, but they found someone with a great voice, because Peter Weller, the way he talks, is very distinct and kind of, you know, has a really
it's pronounced,
nice cadence.
Isn't it?
Yes. Yes. So Peter Weller fit the, I think he was like a marathon runner. So, and you know, so he was very thin and slender, and you know, he had that stamina, and physical, you know, strength there. And he has great lips. Like, they were talking about his nice little Cupid's bow and everything. So
yeah, he's, it works for him. I like his performance a lot in this movie. It is, like I said, he has a very pronounced way of speaking that is that works for being a cyborg, I think, because not a T is missed, not a D is missed, not an H is missed, you know, nothing like that. Everything is very distinctly spoken.
Yes, and I think
quite quietly spoken as well. It's not a lot of shouting.
No, there's not a lot of levels. He stays at the same tone, because that's what you would do in if you were that, you know. So, and I guess, yes. And I guess he like insisted, Peter Weller insisted they hire this mime coach that he had worked with like in some acting school to help him learn to move like a robot. So Kurtwer Smith is talking about like the filming process, how when they were kind of on this downtime waiting for the suit to be made, he would just, you know, they filmed in Dallas, Texas, and it was super hot. He's like, I remember just looking and seeing in the park in this 190 degree parking lot, Peter Weller and this mime just like walking around marching. And I'm like, is that what it's going to look like?
That's horrible.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Super hot. Yeah. And
I didn't realize it was filmed in Dallas. That would be.
Yes. Because at the time, apparently, Dallas had just gone through like this new infrastructure. So they had just built all of these kind of futuristic, really kind of stylish looking buildings. So their city scene was great for kind of the dystopian future aspect that they were kind of going for. It kind of fit perfectly. But yeah, while they were waiting for the suit to be made, it was a lot of downtime. And I just heard what Smith talking about. I just look over and he's in this hot ass parking lot with this mime just like marching. I'm like, what the hell are they doing? Is that what it's going to look like?
Well, Kurtwood Smith has every right to think that, but also it worked.
So. Like his movements really felt robotic, and it worked really well. So, and I like that, you know, we get to know a bit of Murphy. I would have liked to get to know him a little bit more before the shift. I think that's kind of my biggest criticism about the movie, is that I wish we would have gotten more time with Murphy and his family and seen him in that aspect before, you know, everything happens to him. But I think they still give us enough that we can emotionally attach to him, you know, when he's having these flashback visions of his wife and his son and these things. But I would have liked to just have more moments of that before we kind of, you know, get into him now as RoboCop. But I get that you have to get it, you know, your movie's called RoboCop, so you want plenty of time with him as RoboCop. But
well, I do think that's fair. I also think you've got to kind of, or at least I just think of it as, what is the movie we are getting? Yeah. I like the fact that we don't even know Murphy has a family until he's already RoboCop and he's having these flashes of dreams and memories.
Well, I mean, we do get a little bit, like, you know, he's flipping his gun and he says he learned how to do it because his son sees some character.
Oh no, I mean the visual. I mean the visual.
Okay. See him with his family and images of his family. Okay.
Because we do not see him interact with his wife
family
or
before.
Child.
Yeah.
When he is still a human being. So I don't mind that, because I think we're in a movie that wants to punch you in the face. We're not in a movie that kind of wants to give you a hug. So this is how my mind is working when it comes to this sort of thing. So I like that we see how pleasant his family life was when it's already too late. Okay. Because it feels like more of a punch in the face.
Yeah, it feels more like a loss.
And this entire movie is a punch in the face. You know, it's a violent, nasty, horrible movie.
Yes. I totally get that. And I think that makes sense. And I think, you know, that works. Because, it's definitely impactful when he has those moments of seeing his wife and his son and remembering them and going to his old house and all of that. And even when Lewis, his partner, is telling him, you know, she thought you were dead, she had to move on, and he's kind of talking about, like, I remember them but I don't, and he like wants to be left alone. And so those kind of moments were like my favorite moments. So I think because I liked those aspects so much, it just makes me want to get to know Murphy as Murphy more. So because those scenes were well executed, that's what is just kind of wanting me to, like, I really want to know who he was before this happened to him, because I feel so bad for him. So
yeah,
I mean,
think that's absolutely fair as well. But likewise, his death, obviously, early, very, very early on, when he goes and tries to take him and Lewis, is so, it feels very sudden. And yes, we know this is going to happen. I know this is going to happen because I know that he turns into RoboCop after, you know, and kind of comes back to life, quote unquote, within the body of RoboCop. So I know he's going to die reasonably early on. But was I expecting such a violent, constantly shooting? It feels like it goes on for about 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's like they shoot his hand off. Yeah, they shoot his hand off, and then they kind of blast all over his chest, and the blood is flying, and they shoot him in the head, and like, they go to town on him, and he's living through all of this. Like, he doesn't instantly die. They're like torturing him. And I want to say, weren't they hired to like specifically kill him because they wanted him for this program? I can't remember if I'm remembering that right, because I watched it. Like,
I'm actually not sure about that one myself.
I watched this like a few days
possibly
ago,
because they're obviously, Kurtwood Smith is obviously working for.
Yes. OCP. So I feel like I remember a plot point being like they purposely wanted him to be killed so that they could use him for the program, the weaselly kind of third in command guy. who was great.
I'd believe it. Let's roll with that being the case.
So yeah, they blow him away, and then we get this really great POV, like you talk about, of him on the surgical table and them trying to fix him and all the doctors over him and all the chaos. And then, you know, it kind of goes black and we flatline and we hear them still talking, time of death and all of that. And then when the screen lights up, it's like a TV coming on or a computer coming on. And now we get this like computerized visual. And so how they were able to kind of illustrate that without us seeing it from that POV, I thought was a really smart visual choice. Also a great choice just to save money, but it works, you know?
Oh, it works perfectly. Yes. It's exactly what you should be doing. It's great technological visuals that you get
in
this movie.
How do we get this? Yeah, how do we get this transformation without having to spend any money, but still have it be visually interesting and give our audience the story of how this happens and make it interesting. And they were able to execute that with this cool POV thing so well.
Yeah. And you need, I think it's so important that you have that right as RoboCop is, like I say, is born, because you are then with him. He is you. He is the one you are identifying with, even though he is not fully human still from this point onward, because you have been there when he was born. In his eyes, he is you. It's a great way of doing that, whether it's for budget reasons or creative reasons, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it might not have been, but I think it still works, and I would see it as a way of them saving money and not having to just kind of simply show this whole kind of like putting him together transformation. Also just kind of a sad aspect too, when one of the doctors says, or the scientist says, you know, I was able to save like his human arm, but the OCP guy's like, no, get rid of it. I want him to be fully robotic. So there's still one piece of him that can be like a human aspect of him, but no, get rid of it. We don't want that. We want him all to be kind of mostly all just like this robot thing. So, you know,
I suppose that's kind
of the sadness of what they're doing to this man.
Sadness, yes, but I suppose it's kind of terrifying as well when you think about it, the emotional disconnect that they now have, because, well, you know, according to these papers, he's legally dead. We can do what
we can do whatever we want. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, get rid of the arm. They are trying to totally dehumanize everything. Yeah. When you look at that layer of it, it is quite a whole.
How disconnected they are to how this man was a man who had a family and a life, and you know, he's just, you know, part of their little machine that they want to, you know, push forth and you know, create. So
there are not only occasional body horror visuals in this movie, there is very frequent body horror morals in this movie as well, of the dehumanizing of the human body and what, you know, people's personal control over their own body. Murphy within RoboCop still remembers snippets of being Murphy, still has these dreams. The old dream sequences are really, really fascinating. They're probably my favorite parts of the movie as well, when he's remembering his own death and his family life. And there's a really stupid scene when he's kind of remembering his own death as well, and he's sat in his kind of recharge chair.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be being watched by the two people, and they're just like eating a hamburger.
Eating snacks and chilling.
And not paying attention whatsoever. And he's got this kind of polygraph thing going absolutely insane.
Crazy.
And
the
flashes coming up on the TV screens. And these two are just sat there going, do,
talking gossip. And
how incompetent are you at your job? You know?
Right?
That's kind of what I'm saying.
One job, just sit and watch him. Yeah.
He's 2 meters away from you, and you can't see him kind of be all twitchy, and these things show up on these screens and the polygraph go insane. What are you doing? But that's probably one of my favorite parts of the entire movie.
Yeah.
Him fully him remembering his own death, because when you think about it, that's terrifying. That's horrible. That is really, really nasty, nasty stuff. And it's very body horror stuff, because you're not quite yourself, but you're remembering something from your past self. And what is you, and what is the new spliced version of you?
Yeah.
Very, very Cronenberg, shall we say, in that kind of mentality. So I applaud Mr. Verhoeven for putting these kind of similarities and sensibilities into his movie here. I like that a lot. I'm not sure quite how much of a horror aspect I was expecting from this. I'm obviously expecting
quite a bit of body horror. Yeah.
Level, but I enjoy that we actually do get that we get a third police movie, a third dystopian sci-fi movie, and a third body horror movie. I like that it's not just one. I like that it's not just
a good mix of things. Yeah,
and it works, and it balances all really well together. Sure, I wish Nancy Allen would do more in this movie.
I know, but I also liked that, you know, it was a conscious thought for the screenwriter to not have them like have a romantic thing.
I like that. I like that there's not romance.
Yeah, be a peer partner to him, kind of when he's down and out, and you know, they do kind of sick this whole police squad to kill and destroy RoboCop. She grabs him, saves him. You know, gets all the supplies for them, and they're this two-man team to kind of go up against Kurtwood Smith and expose OCP. So I like that they're kind of a team there. But yes, definitely wanted more of her. She was such a cool character. She had some great moments, but definitely would have liked to see her do more. But I liked that he had the support and that it was a woman, and you know, that's not anything drawn attention to, or that she's called out for like being the one lady on the force, or
because I think she is, but it's not
it's not addressed, or other kind of cops making fun of her or anything stupid like that. Like, it's not even a thing. I love that, and the conscious thought of Nancy Allen to kind of, you know, people were telling her, you know, you're very feminine. So she's like, so someone like suggested to her to wear male underwear because it would make her kind of like carry herself differently. And she cut her hair. And, you know, her dad, I think she said, was a cop for about 30 years. So she's like, I know this character. I could totally do this. So there was a conscious thought for her to kind of, you know, strip down a lot of the femininity that people had seen her in other roles, and really just kind of play this straightforward and kind of take in the experiences she knew from her father into this role. So I like that she really put a lot of thought into that, which is also a bummer that she doesn't get more to do, but I like that they do give her some strong moments and they do kind of become this two-man team against the world type thing, which I think are really fun scenes as well. So
there are, and it's good when it is very much the two of them against the world, seemingly, you know, against the OCP. And
so this film is littered with villains, and we haven't talked much about them. So let's talk about our corporate villains in Dick and Bob.
Great names for corporate villains.
Dick Jones.
It has to be said. Dick Jones as well. I mean, these are the kind of names you just don't have for people anymore.
Yes. So when we kind of open with him and really get our introduction to OCP, Dick is like the number two guy in the company, and he's doing this big presentation for these new robots that can, like, you know, kill on command. And, you know, if somebody's holding a gun, they give him a warning to drop the gun.
Yeah.
So he's doing this big boardroom demonstration, his big, bulky robot comes in, where we get some stop motion animation happening here.
Yeah, there are two things I love particularly about this scenario, right? One of them is the stop motion on this, you know, on Dick's original RoboCop prototype that he's made, that isn't actually RoboCop. It's just
a full machine,
bulky looking thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great stop motion. And the second thing I love about all this is that they just always refer to the boss of the company as the old man, and he doesn't have a name.
No.
Yes, he's just the great. Old man. The
old man.
Yeah. Oh, the most important old man sitting man up there. There he is, yes. The old man.
Man sitting at the table. So, yes, he's having this big flashy presentation. So the thing walks in here. He has one of the board members hold a gun and point it at the machine. The machine calls out this warning. You have 30 seconds to drop your weapon. Because it detects. So he's very impressed that, oh yeah, see, this thing could detect when you're holding a weapon. And so the guy looks confused. Dick tells him, put the weapon down. You know, I listened to him, you better put it down. So the guy puts the gun down, but the thing is still counting down. Like, please drop your weapon. The guy's like, I'm not holding a weapon. What's going on? And then everyone starts panicking. The guy's running around trying to hide behind people. The thing's like moving its guns to aim at him. The countdown continues. And then the guy just gets blown away. I think he gets shot like out the window.
It's not just a casual little, we've destroyed this person now. It's like, we have obliterated this person's body.
So it like shoots the guy up in several pieces and like he falls out the window. So a big, huge public failure for Dick's big rollout of his cop robotics kind of thing. And this happens in front of the old man. So the old man's like, I'm done with you. And then here steps in Bob, who's like an eager up and comer. You know, he's trying to make a name for himself. He has his whole RoboCop prototype that he wants to get into development. So while Dick is like, you know, trying to find the words to, you know, finesse the situation to the old man, here comes Bob to interject and say, hey, well, I have this prototype program. It's foolproof. Da, 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 da. I could have it ready, you know, in a month or two, in a couple months. So, you know, why don't you, you know, give me a shot? And so the old man's like, okay, yes, I'm into this. And so Dick does not like Bob coming in, stepping on his toes, making him look bad. So then when the rollout of RoboCop actually is successful, and we get our little montage of RoboCop, which is, I also like how, you know, we don't hear the kind of official RoboCop score until he's RoboCop, because I feel like in other movies, they would pepper it into the score here and there until the big official, but we don't hear it until he, you know, gets in the car and he has his whole big moment, which is also a really cool moment. Bob takes him into the police station and says, hey, here's our RoboCop. We're ready to get him out on the streets, give him a car. The chief just throws the keys to Bob, and then here comes RoboCop walking by, catching it, and like, thank you.
And doesn't then even break as, stride.
No, no, which is very cool. And so then and then we see him in the car driving around, and then we get the bombastic RoboCop music score. So, and we go with this whole montage of him being successful. So Bob,
I like
is
how RoboCop
high.
Also goes and I like how RoboCop also goes and visits school children. At one point.
Yes.
I think we see this on
the pillar
one
of
these,
the community news reports. Yeah.
We do. We see it on one of these news reports. Yeah. And it's very Mr. RoboCop, do you have anything you would like to say to the children? Stay out of trouble. He's like, okay.
Yes.
We're
and even like
with this sort of thing.
Yes. And so we see this montage of him saving this couple's you know, drugstore, liquor store from getting robbed. Yes. We see him save this lady, which every time I watch this movie, I'm like, why is this woman wearing this ridiculous wig? And then I see, oh yeah, because the criminals have to cut a piece of her hair off. So because I'm like, why did they just get somebody with regular hair? Why did she have this terrible curly haired fake wig on? Like, it looks terrible. And then, yeah, the burglars, like, you know, corner her, grab her. They cut off a piece of her hair. And then a very cool kind of very popular shot in the movie is when the guy is holding the woman from behind and he shoots the guy in the balls through her skirt.
So very nice. Very accurate shooting there from RoboCop.
Yes.
We like that.
Yes.
Any movie that has a good scene of a villain getting shot in the penis is a great scene in my mind.
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
And there's nothing more.
They did it with style. You did it with style.
It happens not too often, but
No.
You know when it, you know, it sticks with you when something that does. And
yes. And they did it in a very
red blood spatter on his jeans.
Yeah. So they did it in a very kind of cool, memorable way. So, you know.
Yeah.
So yes, we see good.
That's what should be happening to people who want to do certain things.
Attack women and cut off their wigs.
Yeah.
So we do get this great
shoot them in the penis. No.
We get a scene of him breaking up this guy who's holding a building hostage. I want my job back, and I want a fancy car, and I want... and oh, so
holding the mayor hostage, I think, an act of terrorism.
Yes. And he's asking for all these stupid things, and the cops keep him talking about nonsense, and so then RoboCop's able to stop him. So we get this great montage of him doing the job, getting it done. And so Bob is riding high. His little prototype worked. It's you know, getting things done. He's making Dick look real stupid. But then
Bob,
Dick...
Bob, know, though. Let Bob is the archetypical 80s up-and-coming business person.
Sleazy business man.
Business person.
Yeah.
I hate every fiber of his being.
Yes. Well, when they were doing the casting process, they said, you know, he walked in and he was like, oh, yes, he's our Bob for sure.
Like look at this guy. Yeah,
he's perfect. You know, we even see a scene of him, you know, with two ladies and they're all, you know, getting high. Like, you know.
Right.
So very, very typical corporate, you know, a-hole. So
80s, but particularly 80s corporate.
Yes. So we even get to the scene of him, you know, since he's riding so high, he's talking all this shit about Dick in the bathroom to another guy, like, oh yeah, he's such a loser, you know, his plan's never gonna work, I'll get his job and all this kind of thing. Meanwhile, you know, we get this interesting kind of shot from under the stall. We see some feet like sitting on a toilet, but we just see the feet and the like the bottom part of the legs. And the shot is kind of coming from under the stall through those legs to Bob and this other guy talking all this shit about Dick. And then as they're talking, you know, it's the typical shot. Bob is talking shit. His back is turned. Everyone else in the bathroom kind of scurries out, including the guy Bob's talking to. And the man who was sitting on the toilet in the stall was Dick. And he heard all the shit talk that Bob was talking. And they have this big face off. And so now Dick is like, has his full vendetta against Bob. And Dick ends up kind of winning that battle. And we see Dick on top kind of quite a few times. So we're really worried about, you know, him getting his way, because we see him get several wins. So not only on the win we saw him getting on RoboCop, when, you know, RoboCop finds out that he's kind of the head of the corruption and goes to confront him and arrest him, but he can't.
Yeah, I mean, that's later on, obviously. But...
Yes, but in this scene, you know, he kind of declares his vengeance against Bob, and sure enough, he gets it, because he does hire Kurtwood Smith to go show up at Bob's house when he's chilling. You know, sniffing with the ladies, kicks the ladies out, and then here comes Dick on the TV screen with a little message for him. You know, you thought you could one up me. Well, you're done. Kurtwood Smith shoots his legs out from under him and throws a grenade in there, and walks
another
out.
Another horrible death for RoboCop.
Yes, and blows up Bob. So then that's when I think RoboCop now. That scene that we discussed with the terrible workers not watching him, he's having these dreams, remembering his death.
Yes.
And now his brain is giving him this initiative to go kill all of the people who killed him instead of just kind of sticking to his general crime fighting.
It's interesting, because I think after that scene in the bathroom, when Bob is at full, you know, I'm snooty mode.
Yeah.
We're almost on Dick's side. Until we realize Kurtwood Smith has been hired by Dick.
Yes, and has kind of been in his
And then we realize, Dick's the one in charge of it all. Dick by name, Dick by nature, as we once say. He's the one in charge of it all. He's the real villain of the entire movie.
Yeah, yes.
Even though we spend a lot of the first half of the movie kind of feeling sorry for him and wanting to see Bob get his comeuppance for being such a a dick himself. Yeah. You know? Very, he wants Dick's job. He wants Dick's personality as well. I
apparently,
think.
But, yes. But you know, he gets his stuff cut short. And then ultimately, when RoboCop is now on this mission to find all the men who killed him, he goes after one of the main henchmen guys, the one that he actually said the line to as Murphy, "Dead or alive, you're coming with me."
Yes.
So he finds him at a gas station and says it to him again. So then this kind of leads the guy to remember, oh my gosh, is this the same guy?
He killed you.
Yes, right? And so he doesn't kill him then, but kind of freaks him out. And so they kind of know that RoboCop is out to get them. And then I believe that's when Dick decides to have the whole kind of Bob is gone now, so get rid of Bob's invention.
Yeah.
So then they decide to he sets the whole squad to kill RoboCop and destroy RoboCop. Yeah,
because Dick still wants his own stop motion creation to be the one that goes forward, even though it still doesn't work when it comes back.
Later,
see later on in the movie.
He's like, it's guarding the building downstairs.
Invention,
yeah,
Dick.
He's like, it's guarding the building downstairs, and then like RoboCop just has this big gun and shoots it. It's done.
It's hilarious with this stupid C7 whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Stop motion monster, I'll call it. When it's basically a fight with RoboCop when RoboCop goes to confront Dick.
Yeah,
and RoboCop runs down the stairs, and the stop motion creation can't go down the stairs because stairs are too difficult for it. How is this thing ever going to work at being
right?
A
and interviewing anybody, just go somewhere with stairs and it can't get to you. So yes, he ordered.
Not thought your creation.
No,
through
he did
Dick.
Not.
You need
That's
to be...
why Dick is an idiot. That's why it failed and killed a random guy in the boardroom. So yeah, he orders the destruction of RoboCop. Lewis saves him, two against the world, and then they decide to go up against Kurtwood Smith's big gang because now he knows kind of they're involved in all of that.
This is where you get the guy turning into the toxic waste creature.
So yes, they face off. He blows away a bunch of the guys. He catches Kurtwood Smith, arrests him, takes him to jail, but ultimately Dick gets him out and gets nice new toys for Kurtwood and his crew.
So
RoboCop gets at most of the guys, but he doesn't get like the main crew. So
big
that's
military
when,
weapons they're they
yes,
get now, don't they?
Yes, and the fancy car we saw in the commercial, which Kurtwood Smith just blows up for fun.
it's an awful looking car. We wouldn't want this car.
No, we wouldn't.
What's it called? Like the Nexus 6000 or
something
like
ridiculous
that.
Like that. Yes, very futuristic. And so then we do get kind of our big fight climax with RoboCop going against the Kurtwood gang, who were ultimately the ones who killed him, which is really great. And that's when we get our toxic waste guy. So the guy who he did say the iconic line to, tries to hit RoboCop with his truck, but runs his and RoboCop just like slowly moves out of the way. Like, and then the guy crashes into a big vat of like toxic waste and immediately comes out of the van all melted, disgusting, this lumpy mess, begging the other guys, "Help me." It's like such a very painful visual. And everyone's
Again, two things I like about this. One, that we haven't already mentioned. One, when toxic waste is stored randomly in the street in barrels that say toxic
alley,
waste on
right?
them.
It's like in this big, it's like almost like a water tower that just says toxic waste.
Just says toxic
in this
waste.
Alleyway.
Okay. Why is this here?
Yes.
And number two, the reaction of Ray Wise, who is one of the henchmen, when he comes up to him begging for his life, help me, help me. And he just screams in his face.
Yes, right? He's like, ah, get away. Like, don't touch me. But like, where was the Peck from Ghostbusters? Like, he was coming after the Ghostbusters for how they were storing their ghosts. Meanwhile, over here.
Yeah. It's just yeah.
Big water tower. Toxic waste just in an alley and nobody
very poor waste management. Yes,
that just speaks to the dystopian Detroit.
Oh yeah, that's how bad
nobody
Detroit
cares
is. Just
about the storage of their
waste
toxic
everywhere
waste. Yes. Ever why since... why are you keeping it
why is it there ever since this is what Detroit's turned into now. It's just somewhere where they just store toxic waste on random street corners. Ever since the cars left and Motown left, it's been no good in Detroit, and it's turned into this. They've got nothing left.
Just toxic waste vats and alleys. So,
I wonder how people from Detroit view this movie.
I don't know, because I know
from Detroit like Detroit.
They do, because James A. Janisse from The Kill Count, he's from Detroit. And so it's a very big frustration for him when movies are set in Detroit but don't film there or add anything to the infrastructure of Detroit. So he loves being from Detroit, and he knows there's a lot of nice places there. So that's a big kind of frustration he always talks about.
Yeah,
so like
sure
when he talks about movies like Don't Breathe, I think that's set in Detroit, or what is that movie? A Barbarian, that was set in Detroit, but also not filmed there. So things like that, he does kind of get a little frustrated when they only depict like the bad aspects of Detroit, not talking about how there are good places to be. And even just on top of that, he gets kind of frustrated when they don't actually film there. So like, at least if you're like shitting on Detroit as a city, like, at least, you know, pay them to film there, to be there, and that kind of thing. So it is from his perspective, I feel like, you know, that's maybe how most people from Detroit feel about their city and the film industry. So,
which I think is absolutely fair, and I would believe that wholeheartedly. I'd also just like to know if anybody from Detroit or otherwise not from Detroit refers to it as Detroit.
What is it? Is that the spelling? Is that how you would say it in French?
Detroit.
Detroit. Oh, okay.
I don't think anybody does that.
So yes, toxic waste man ultimately gets run over by a speeding Kurtwood Smith and explodes all over his windshield. Disgusting. Yes, and so then a kind of a whole big shootout happens between Kurtwood Smith and Lewis, who was also there. She gets shot and is kind of incapacitated, and then his other right hand guy who's left, he goes to this tower with the big gun and ultimately uses like the crane arm to drop a bunch of shit on RoboCop, crushing him.
Yeah.
And then Kurtwood Smith attacks him, stabs him with a big like metal pole. And then Lewis gets her little moment. She shoots the guy in the tower because he's like, yeah, I got him, boss. I got him. Like all happy. And then she shoots and blows up the tower. So yes, Lewis.
Yes.
And then RoboCop, he actually has like this big spike that comes out and he's able to stab Kurtwood. So you think Kurtwood Smith is going to win? No. But no, RoboCop gets his big little spiky hand and stabs him in the neck. So very visceral. I love, you know, I love my comeuppance. So I like seeing our villains get gory, beautiful deaths. So that was pretty great to see him.
And obviously, most importantly, Kurtwood Smith allows RoboCop to record a certain statement that he makes where he says that obviously he was hired by Dick, and Dick is the one who arranged the killing of Bob and all this sort of stuff. But it's very important to the very, very end of the movie. We also like at this point how RoboCop ends up losing his helmet.
So I love that as well. So we didn't really talk about that. So at the end, like when it's kind of him and Lewis on the run, hiding out and kind of formulating this plan to you know, end all of the corruption with Kirkwood Smith and his gang and Dick Jones and all of that. He takes off his helmet's kind of destroyed in that last kind of big battle they had. So he takes off his helmet. So we get to see his face. And how they did it was really creepy and it kind of sticks in your mind. But I like that they get to see his face, that it's him, that we get to see, you know, Murphy as kind of that last bit of man that he is. And so they know who is coming after them. They know they can put the face to, you know, this person coming after them.
It's phenomenal work, though, to put, you know, to have Peter Weller and have it really merge
with his face so smoothly
into all this mechanical, you know, whatever the hell's going on at the back
in
of
the
his
back
head.
Of his head. Yeah, yeah. It's very eerie, but it looks great.
It's better than what we get in Terminator, you know, when it's painfully obvious in when Arnold's looking in the mirror and it's just this mask of Arnold's face.
Yes.
Over the top of
like
a Terminator eye.
Yes. Yeah, that looks very not great. But this looks
amazing. Considering, you know, there's 3 years between that, and oh my god, there's some phenomenal effects in Terminator. Yeah, I just don't think that's one of them. Yeah. Also, some stop motion. But at not one point in RoboCop was I ever thinking that effect doesn't look great. They always look phenomenal. I think in RoboCop the effects work. The stop motion, we like stop motion. It's a different way of doing it, sure.
Yeah.
But it's good stop motion. So you can't whinge and moan about that because it's good stop motion work. It's just, it's that different type. Yeah. But there's not one little instance. And I think it's somewhat of an unfortunate thing about Terminator. I love Terminator. I think Terminator's the best Terminator movie. But you can't look at that scene and go, that looks like a good effect, because it's blatantly not that. It's blatantly not Arnold's face, but this on Peter Weller's merging into the RoboCop mechanism looks flawless.
So, yeah, it's very smooth. There's no like weird seaming around the mouth or anything like that.
Nothing.
So I like that they found a reason and a way to have these, you know, the people who killed him get to see his face without the mask. So I like that the whole finale, he's kind of unmasked like that. So
it's
once
that human connection again.
Yes. So once he defeats Kirkwood Smith, him and Lewis take their sad beat up police car, drive it to OCP. They have the big guns that Dick Jones gave to the criminal crew. They blow up the robot that Dick is just upstairs saying, oh yeah, we got one of them guarding the building. We'll be fine. And he just blows it up, walks into the building, uses this little spike as kind of like a USB, plugs it into the screens in the boardroom and plays the clips of Dick saying all of the things, or Kirkwood saying all of the things. I think it's Dick, like a picture, an image of Dick saying all of the things that he
It did. Is actually, yeah, it is, isn't it?
And so, obviously, you know, he can't worm out of that. And so he's still trying to, though. And obviously there's that stopper for RoboCop that he can't attack anybody who works for OCP. So he's holding the old man boss hostage, like, leave me alone, like, you're never gonna get me, da 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 type, you know, thing that he says. But then the old man fires Dick right there, and RoboCop's like, thank you. So now that Dick doesn't work for OCP, RoboCop can kill him. and he blows him away. And then we get our very popular scene of him falling out the window with very super long, gummy claymation arms, like wiggling down.
Oh, sure.
So people always talk about, like, why did they make the arms so long? Like, what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why people say that. If there is one effect in RoboCop that doesn't look great, it's that. And I'm thankful it doesn't have anything to do with RoboCop himself.
Yeah.
Yes. But it is that. Doesn't take anything away from the movie. What I love about this final arrest scene, and it is like the very end of the movie, is that when RoboCop comes in, obviously the full face is now visible to everybody. Mm-hmm. He is at his most human. He knows himself. He knows he was Murphy and all this kind of stuff. And when he understands, now after going through that original experience, now I can't do anything to you because you're an OCP officer, but I'm just going to play this and let everybody else decide
what to do with you.
Then, yes, the old man fires him. There's the thank you. There's the shooty out the window. And we all go, bye, Dick. You dick.
Yes, you're terrible. And then we get, and like you said, he remembers, he knows who he is to a degree. And so when, you know, the old man kind of asks him his name, he says, it's Murphy. And that's how we end the movie. So I love that. Like, I love that he ends, you know, owning who he was, the man he was.
He does.
So it's great. Yeah.
It
very
is great.
Campy, crazy, violent, gory, but so many cool practical effects, just a really solid story and idea, some great visuals, some memorable moments, and really just throwing some emotional stuff and great performance from Peter Weller. Just throughout kind of the craziness that's happening, to find ways to ground it in a lot of aspects, I think just makes this movie a lot of fun. So I hope you enjoyed your first time watch of RoboCop.
Yes, this is the best thing about it is that I got more than I was expecting out of it, as we've spoken about, which I always like. I think that's great, especially when all that added stuff just works to elevate the movie to a better level, to a more enjoyable level, to a nastier level, because it's a nasty, horrible movie. But it wants to be. It always wants to be. It wants to smack you in the face, like I've said, and it does smack you in the face constantly. RoboCop's great. I'm glad, very glad I've finally watched it. It was on the bucket list for a reason. It wasn't even one of those half-forced bucket list choices.
Okay. Just doing it because everyone says I should watch it kind of picks.
This was very much a, yes, I do genuinely want to watch RoboCop.
Okay, so awesome.
All the applause goes out to Mr. Verhoeven, Mr. Weller, Miss Allen, and the rest of them. Kurtwood Smith. Not Dick. We don't like Dick. He's good. What's his name? Ronnie Cox plays
Great.
Dick.
Oh my God. Cox plays Dick.
Oh God. I've just realized there.
Dick's
of course
Cox
he does.
Cox. Yes.
How appropriate for the man named Cox to play the man named Dick.
Yes.
Foul, vile, filth on today's episode of Morgan Hasn't Seen for itself.
I mean, it happens. It happens. Like, those fun coincidences. It's very much like Oliver Wood being played by someone named Bickerstaff. So, you know, it happens.
But this is more on the nose than that.
Fair.
This is way more on the nose.
It is.
Yes, but there we go.
Special. Would you buy that for a dollar?
I'd buy that for a dollar. Or we have to say it in the stupid voice, don't we, that he uses his ridiculous mustache. I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yes.
Great. Surrounded by like custard women. Pies and women.
Yes.
On like sliding around on the floor.
Yes, like some ridiculous game show.
Very excited.
Yeah.
You would be very excited, wouldn't you, if you had a lot of scantily clad women around you and you look like
and
that.
And custard sure pies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were, all the custard pies you could eat.
It's like the fire. It's like the finale of Bugsy Malone if it wasn't children.
Yeah. Just a bunch of pies. But yes, ridiculous show. But very memorable line for people from this movie. So yay! I'm glad you finally watched RoboCop. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yes.
Yeah. Bucket list film checked off. Thank you to all the people on Twitter who voted in our polls and helped us pick this film to be the video podcast episode for the month. So I hope you're either watching on the It's a Wonderful Podcast YouTube channel or listening on the It's a Wonderful Podcast feed as per usual.
Absolutely. This is, of course, not the only show we have on the It's a Wonderful Podcast feed. It's a Wonderful Podcast, the main show every Friday, celebrating old movies. We're in a cyborg sci-fi mood over there as well.
Yes.
At the moment. It's very exciting. As we mentioned earlier on, we actually talked about Metropolis last week, 1927's crazy, insane, ridiculously ambitious epic sci-fi Fritz Lang, phenomenal stuff from nearly 100 years ago on the main show last Friday. This Friday, we're going to be talking about Forbidden Planet, Star Trek Before Star Trek
from
1956.
So yes, if you were ever curious about what Leslie Nielsen's real hair color was, watch Forbidden Planet.
Definitely. Absolutely. A wonderful movie in itself. But yeah, sci-fi kick at the moment on It's a Wonderful Podcast, the main show as well, every Wednesday and Friday on the It's a Wonderful Podcast feed. Subscribe wherever you are listening on all major podcast platforms, of course. And if you are watching, hi again, but subscribe and ding your notification bells up there on the It's a Wonderful Podcast YouTube channel for all the fun stuff we have here and have coming to here as well. If you would like to support us on Patreon or donate in any way, there is a link in the description of this episode to go and do that. We would love you forever, certainly. But you can just find us on social media. It has been scrolling down at the bottom of the screen or on YouTube if you are watching the video. At It's a Wonderful One on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at The Purple Dawn with a 3 instead of the E in the because, Janine.
3 is the magic number.
We still don't call it X, do we? We refuse.
Yes.
On Instagram and TikTok and Threads at The Purple Dawn. Janine, all your dead or alive stuff is where.
You can find me at Janine Devine _ on Twitter, Janine Devine on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads. If you want to get any merch for any of our shows, just check the description for the link. If you're watching, it's scrolling by below. Or search It's a Wonderful Podcast on teespring.com. And if you want to purchase any of my art and print form, you can find that at my Big Cartel shop, g9design.bigcartel.com.
Well, yes, I think it's quite obvious, Janine. It's just straightforward, simple. RoboCop impression, please, to close us out.
Oh my goodness. 3, 2, 1. Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
That's one of your best ones in ages. Bye.